Good morning, good morning, good morning, Tucsonians. You know what time it is. You know what time it is. It is Higher Ground with Dr. Holt, one of the best radio talk show podcasts in the nation, especially when we're talking about mental health. There is no one or no other show that's better than our show. We bring the real deal. We bring the real discussions. We are brave enough to have those topics and have those discussions that a lot of shows just don't want. So we just happy to be here again at Higher Ground. You know, I said every Saturday, get your cup of coffee, get your half and half hazelnut, get your vanilla cream, whatever you want. If get your favorite cereal, John, you in the studio, you know we say it all the time. You get your Raisin Bran, Fruit Loops, Apple Jacks, whatever it is, cream of wheat. If you want some hot cereal, oatmeal, malt meal. Don't get me started. But today we are pumped. We're excited. Just to have a great discussion. Listen, I'm telling you, you listen to one of the best radio shows, podcasts in the nation. We specialize. We the guru of mental health. We the enchilada of mental health. We are the everything you can think of. When it comes to mental health, we talk about our traumas. We talk about our depressions. We talk about our anxieties. We talk about all these different types of different areas of mental health. And in times like these, we have to get to the point where we can have brave conversations about mental health. We are also seeing, even in our today's media climate, associating mental health to a lot of mass shootings. And so there's a lot of questions about mental health. And I think the big thing is still removing the stigma that it's okay to get help in mental health. You're not ashamed to get your teeth fixed from a dentist. You're not ashamed to get your heart fixed from a cardiologist. Then why are we ashamed to get a therapist or get mental health professional assistance when it comes to us getting treatment and healing for our mind? Listen, we have a great show today, and I'm not going to take too much of her time. But today we're still on trauma. We're taking trauma to the next level. I know you're saying, well, Dr. Ho, why are we spending time on trauma? Because what we're finding now in a lot of our new data and a lot of our diagnosis, we're beginning to realize that trauma is the culprit to a lot of the issues that we see in mental health. And when we look at depression and we look at people being diagnosed with even bipolar disorder or being diagnosed with sometimes schizophrenia or whatever the case may be, when we look at it in grief and bereavement, sometimes the triggers, a lot of times it's dealing with our trauma and peeling the layers of the onion. My instructor told me, you know, you guys need to slow down on diagnosing all the time. Find the trauma first. And so I still have that in my head. And so that's what we're doing. We're looking at our traumas and looking at our stressors and the way our bodies responds to perceiving threats and things of that nature. And we know that the brain and trauma, there's a connection there on regards to how it affects our body physically. Because if we are stimulated psychologically, emotionally with triggers, with our brokenness and pains that has happened to us, if we don't work to treat those, then it exacerbates into bigger problems from childhood to adulthood. So today we again talk about trauma, but we're talking about PTSD. Lately, I'm probably sure you're hearing a lot of PTSD lately. A lot of patients, a lot of clients are being diagnosed with PTSD. I've had some patients and clients even tell me that I have PTSD. I said, well, what? I asked them, I said, what is PTSD? I don't know, but the doctor told me that's what I have.
Yes.
And PTSD stands for post-traumatic stress disorder. And so we're going to be having a great topic on talking about that. Years ago, PTSD was kind of like the diagnosis for a lot of war heroes. A lot of war heroes was coming from World War I, World War II, Korean War, Vietnam War, Kuwait, and being diagnosed with this diagnosis. But now our more relevant science and data is showing that you don't necessarily have to go to war to have PTSD. Nope. And so I'm not going to spill all the fun. I have my good friend from the community, mental health community. Her name is Dr. Norris, and she is a board-certified psychiatrist. So I told you, we're on the move. I'm telling you, there's nothing like higher ground, right? We are bringing the big hitters to our show. Last Saturday, I had Dr. Ballard, a clinical psychologist. And so today, this Saturday, we have a board-certified psychiatrist. And so I want to welcome her to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so we're just excited to have you here. So tell Radio Land about you, who you are, your background, and all of that.
All right. Well, thank you, Dr. Holt. So my name's Christine Norris. As you mentioned, I am a psychiatrist. I'm an osteopathic physician, so proud DO here in Tucson. Much of my work was actually with the military, having worked with the Air Force for 8 years. My last station was actually here in Tucson at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. So as always, shout out to my mental health team, former mental health team over at the 355th Medical Group. It's an amazing group of civilians, therapists, enlisted members, officers, folks who really have such a wonderful dedication to mental health for active duty members and their families. And I'm very proud still to have worked with them because it was some of the toughest work that we did. But they made every day just a wonderful environment to work in at. And every day was a good day.
Over
at the mental health clinic. So, but most of my work, as I mentioned, was in with active duty folks. So we did see a lot of trauma related to combat. However, what we were quickly finding was, as you said, there are other forms of trauma in addition to military trauma. A lot of that was childhood that resurfaced as a result of their time in the military. Many, unfortunately, dealt with life-threatening assaults, whether it was physical, emotional, sexual. Unfortunately, our service members experienced that and also their families. And so one of the things that I grew to learn having served was that sometimes the focus really isn't going to be on combat. Exacerbated it, maybe that they were actually very capable of handling combat trauma, but what really stuck and what really impacted them moving forward was the childhood trauma or the repetitive trauma, things that we don't think of as very big deals, but over time really had a cumulative effect, and those were the things that we ended up working with many of our patients.
I know I wanted you on the show. I wanted to bring a psychiatrist on, and as well as psychologists and the whole big mental health profession family. When I looked at your bio, I was like, "Oh, this is perfect, right?" Because I saw the military background. Because we know that this is where a lot of this had began, and at some point we were almost like limiting that. The only way you could get PTSD is you had to go to war and be exposed to the different violence that's out there on the battlefield. But we began to say, wait a minute, what about if you're exposed to that same violence in the hood, like we like to say, right? And you don't have to go to Iraq and you don't have to go to Afghanistan to develop PTSD, because if our own inner communities, and not just our communities, but even domestic violence at home, being exposed to high levels of traumatic experience or sexual assaults, you know, now we're seeing. So if you could talk a little bit about some of that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Really the biggest thing with the repetitive kind of trauma is that it's over time. If there is an advantage to combat trauma, it's that it's time limited. You know you're going to be exposed to it for 4 to 6 months. It's going to be intense, but there's an end point. Whereas especially with children witnessing violence or experiencing violence in the home, there's no end point. Leaving the home is what you hope is the end point for them, but then it figures out a way to manifest itself into adulthood, to adolescent years, and leaving the home doesn't necessarily mean that the trauma goes away.
Right.
And that's really what we have been finding with trauma, and absolutely what you said about our minds affiliating trauma with combat. That's not to say that that isn't important,
right.
but part right. of it is because a lot of the studies have come out of the VA,
right.
Which is wonderful. It's taught us a lot. But yes, it really made us only think about trauma being related to combat and no other
yeah.
options.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. you know, what we're finding now is, you know, sometimes being exposed to a little bit of trauma over time is just as big a deal as being exposed to a big trauma,
yeah.
you know, one time.
Right, right. Woo, I'm telling you, Dr. Norris is on it this morning. If you a listener, you know how we do it every Saturday. Our live callers are welcome. I know yeah. you probably want to ask some questions on PTSD. Like we say, we're seeing a lot of new diagnoses of PTSD, and maybe you have been diagnosed with it, and maybe you want to get a little bit more information and talk to a board-certified psychiatrist such as Dr. Norris that's in the studio with me today. Feel free to give us a call. Call us right now at area code 520-790-2040. That is 790-2040. Maybe you have a family member that's been diagnosed with PTSD, or maybe a child due to whatever has transpired in their early childhood
yeah.
Have maybe been diagnosed with PTSD, and you want to get a little bit more understanding, you want to talk to a psychiatrist. We have her here in the studio. Don't miss this opportunity. So give us a call again at 2040, or you can also email me, and I can get your email if you can't call at the time. Email me now at higherground@1030@gmail.com and get your comment in, and we'll do what we can to answer your question, give you some leeway, and give you some time. So I know we're probably getting close to a break, and so when we come back, hopefully we got some calls on the line. Let's talk about it. So again, we have one of the best psychiatrists in the land.
Thank you.
So Dr. Norris, she's in the studio. So keep it locked. Stay tuned to Higher Ground with Dr. Hope. We'll be right back. All right, y'all, hear it. Marvin Gaye, what's going on? Well, let me tell you what's going on. Higher Ground right now with Dr. Holden. We have Dr. Norris in the house with us in the studio. She giving us the business on trauma and on post-traumatic stress disorder. And so she really gave us some great pointers on, you know, the different things that we are seeing with trauma and PTSD. So Dr. Norris, so we've been talking about PTSD. We know really the diagnosis is still not that old. We know that APA had give us a formal way we can diagnose like in 1980. You know, so a lot of the science have developed.
Yes.
I've seen some older books as soon as we got some stuff on PTSD and trauma in the 90s have now been revised.
Yes.
Because of the fact that we're learning more about how the trauma affects the brain and more updated information. So, so tell us, how can we define PTSD? What is this acronym that we are seeing as a diagnosis, and what are the symptoms that's associated with it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, the most important thing to know about PTSD is that the symptoms in and of itself are not always a bad thing. I think
right.
that's the thing that a lot of patients are surprised by.
Okay.
The symptoms of PTSD are, in fact, very protective at the time of the trauma. You know, when you're in a combat zone, when you're living in a dangerous environment, home environment, things like being hypervigilant about
yeah.
your surroundings,
yeah.
Being angry all the time and even being irritable so that you can
yeah.
keep people at bay. Those are things that really do protect the person. And even not sleeping can be protective because
wow.
you want to be able to get up at a moment's notice
right.
and save your life. The problem is when that no longer translates to something that's protective and then becomes prohibitive to living a good life and it becomes destructive, you know.
Okay.
Being mad to keep dangerous people at bay is one thing, but being mad at your loved ones is an entirely different enchilada, if you will, and it no longer becomes this protective set of symptoms. And so for PTSD, we look at four main set of symptoms.
Okay.
The first one is re-experiencing, you know, how we re-experience the trauma. So for a lot of folks, that comes in the form of nightmares. Yeah. I recently had a patient who talked about how he hated the idea of closing his eyes and going to sleep because he knew it meant that he would have to see his friend die. And he actively avoided sleep. And then that active avoidance of sleep ended up being not sleeping at all and then being sleep deprived and tired all the time. And then when he did sleep, then the nightmares were flourishing.
Wow.
So re-experiencing is a big one. For a lot of folks, it's dreams, flashbacks, feeling like you're there all of a sudden, even if you're, you know, sitting in a radio talk show room, all of a sudden you feel like you're in the middle of a combat zone. That's what a flashback feels like. Having the same physical symptoms as if you were in that traumatic event. So again, sitting there watching TV, but then all of a sudden you see a movie that involves sexual assault and all of a sudden your heart is racing fast, your mind gets anxious, and you basically have this kind of blackout feeling. That's what re-experiencing involves. The second one is avoidance, just plain not wanting to talk about it, not wanting to have reminders. Again, same patient actively avoided routes to his usual grocery store, gas station, things like that, because it meant that he would have to drive to places that would remind him of his trauma. And so if that meant
these would be like triggers.
Yep, exactly. Okay. Trying to avoid those triggers. So even if it meant an extra 15-minute drive, doubling his drive time, that was worth it for him to not have to see, hear, smell, feel things that would remind him of what he had experienced in the past.
So let me ask you something. So in regards to PTSD, and it really gets personal, right? So we also see divorce associated with it sometimes as well, is because sometimes it's very overwhelming for the spouse. And because they may be hypervigilant or avoidant, they get dissociative too. They just cut off. It just gets tough for the marriage. Could you talk a little bit on that, how you've seen that affect the spouse and marriages and families?
Absolutely. One of the things that we've seen definitely in our patients is how they come back how a trauma will affect how they relate to their loved ones, and especially in marriages and partnerships and things like that.
Yeah.
And one of that is this idea that, you know, since a violation has occurred, you know, a trauma has occurred where it really puts on its head this idea of I'm safe, the world is a good place, the people who are around me are good, safe people.
Okay.
They translate that to everyone, and unfortunately it's indiscriminate. It translates to their spouses, to their kids, and so they no longer can relate to their husbands or their wives because, one, they're trying to protect them from learning about the details of their trauma.
Okay.
You know, they don't want to traumatize their loved one in an effort to share their experiences.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then they also find themselves having to avoid them so that they're not on the receiving end of their irritability or their anger. And then and then that space grows more and more, and it's I'm sure contributive to the divorce rate, especially in the military and among trauma victims, because they just no longer are able to relate to people who care about them, and they no longer have that association of this is a person who loves me and can protect me. It's no one can protect me, and so why surround myself with anybody? And that's really what hurts a lot of these partnerships, is just that inability to stay open and vulnerable. And in an effort to protect themselves, they close everyone out, including their loved ones.
Wow. So we obviously see that that we have to put a stronger focus on mental health and support them.
Absolutely.
Because one of the other things too I want to pick your brain on as a psychiatrist is the neurological effects that PTSD have on the brain, or trauma has on the brain. Could you just talk a little bit about What is going on in the brain when we talk about post-traumatic or any traumatic stressors?
Yeah, well, with, you know, just like with anything, whenever we experience something, you know, we get an overabundance of, you know, different neurotransmitters, whether it be dopamine, norepinephrine, serotonin, even histaminic receptors. And again, anything in moderation is always a good thing.
Right.
What happens is when we have, say, chronic exposure to trauma, then, you know, those stress hormones like cortisol become basically a part of our system. Mm-hmm. And, you know, cortisol, again, in small amounts and moderation, it's not a bad thing. You know, sometimes we do procrastinate to instill a little bit of that anxiety so that we can get focused and concentrate on the things that we need to get done. But when you get that burst of cortisol all the time, when you get that burst of norepinephrine all the time, then those are the things that make us too vigilant, to the point that we don't sleep, to the point that everything around us feels like a danger.
Yeah.
And it really does inhibit all the other factors in our brain that are helpful to us. So our ability to concentrate is no longer intact because we're so busy trying to think that everything is important that we no longer can prioritize. One of the metaphors I often tell my patients is, you know, we're supposed to feel anxious when we're standing in front of a lion, and we're not supposed to feel anxious when we're standing in front of a domesticated house cat.
Right.
You know, the problem with trauma is
that analogy.
You know, like, it's okay to feel anxious. That is a part of the human psyche. It is a part of who we are. It's an emotion that is very normal, again, in small spurts. The problem is our brain, when we experience trauma, no longer differentiates the cat from the lion.
Yeah.
And so instead, everything is a lion and there are no breaks. So your brain never gets a restart. It never gets to shut down because it's always, you know, it's always spiking all the time. But with that comes the exhaustion, the inability to sleep, but then you're tired all the time and then you can't function on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
Because after a while, if you don't let the computer in your head rest, it starts getting glitchy. And that's essentially what happens to folks with PTSD.
Wow. I'll tell you, we have some great information that is taking place here in the studio at 10:30, The Voice on Higher Ground with Dr. Hope. You need to give us a call. I'm telling you, I know there's a lot of people. I work with a lot of kids that have high levels of trauma and post-traumatic stress disorder, which explains why a lot of times, as Dr. Norris was talking about, that trauma does affect the brain. It affects even to the point it compromises cognition, the thinking part, the decision-making can be altered. So it affects kids on an academic level. So we're going to continue our conversation. We're so happy to have Dr. Norris with us, and we're going to be picking her brain a little bit more. So feel free to give us a call, 790-2040. We're getting ready to take a break. But when we come back, we're going to move forward at a whole another higher level. We're talking about PTSD. Again, you're listening to Higher Ground with Dr. Hope. Keep it locked. We'll be right back. All right, we're back here at Higher Ground with Dr. Holt. We have a special guest, a board-certified psychiatrist. Dr. Norris has been really just giving us the tea on PTSD. And so we're just happy to have her with us. And so we were talking about what is post-traumatic stress disorder? What is PTSD? We hear a lot of people saying now that I have PTSD and really don't understand it, don't know how to get treated for it and things like that. And, you know, in my field of work as a traumatologist, working for MSU of Denver, our WEAC team, you know, they send us out. You know, I go out and do a lot of trauma training in a lot of areas, specifically to a lot of school districts, and helping educators look at our children through a trauma lens. It's kind of like three phases of trauma, how I teach it: trauma informed. We got to educate them to be informed. Then I have to teach them to go from informed to be trauma sensitive.
Yes.
And then the third phase is trauma responsive. And so that's my training. program that I've developed to where we start out in form. I teach you how to get sensitive, and then after your sensitivity and you're cognizant of the issue, then we look at how do I grab all of this training and put it into my toolbox so I can bring it into my classroom and I can shift the culture and climate of our classrooms. And so that's the stuff, the type of work that I do with MSU of Denver, WEAC. I'm giving you a plug in, WEAC. And so a lot of my friends and colleagues out in Denver, Colorado, shout out to Mike, shout out to Jam, my directors. Awesome discussion on PTSD. So let's dig a little deeper, you know, because these are tough conversations and brave conversations. That's why Higher Ground is different from any other radio show in the nation, because we have those brave conversations. We bring experts and scholarly people that can come and really help us to look at how do we help people heal from their brokenness. And one of the things, some of my counterparts and colleagues in mental health, especially in militaries, we're seeing an increase of suicide as well. Is there a correlation between trauma and suicide in your lens?
At least in my experience, there certainly is. Okay. And that's why it's important to address trauma, you know, as soon as we identify it.
Okay.
Because, you know, one of the things that I often have a conversation about with my patients is that PTSD does not have to be lifelong.
That's right.
It just means you met criteria for a certain set of symptoms at this time. It doesn't mean that you can recover.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that you can't move forward. And usually it's that hopelessness that leads to suicidality. It's that feeling like, you know, this lack of sleep will never end. Having to see these images after, you know, after I go to sleep, that's never ending. The fact that, you know, my spouse left me, but I know why they left me. And it's not because we didn't get along. It's because of the trauma I experienced and I pushed them away. You know, those are typically the triggers that end up affecting these men and women and make them think that suicide is their best option, because the quality of life decreases significantly, and for them it's no longer worth living. And I always think it's important to help them recognize that this can be temporary.
Yeah.
That, you know, death is permanent. You know,
yes.
There's no getting around that. But trauma and even being able to overcome it is doable. It's a lot of work, definitely, and it's difficult. I never sugarcoat to my patients that trauma work is easy, because it's not, but it's not permanent, whereas suicide is.
So what would you say is probably some of the most difficult things as a professional that you, as working with patients, what are some of the difficulties that you have with people that shows high levels of trauma in regards to maybe could be your advice that you give them, your diagnosis, or your process of treatment? Do people give you a hard time?
Do people give you a hard time? Yeah.
Let me just quit trying to be deep. Do people give you a hard time, Dr. Norris?
Part of it is that, you know, when you get a diagnosis, it very much feels permanent.
I mean,
much of what I tell my patients are not surprising to them, because they've always had a feeling that they have PTSD, but they just didn't know what it was called, and actively avoided seeing me because they knew seeing me would mean someone objectively will tell them, hey, I think you meet criteria for PTSD. And so it's sort of like, you know, when we try to avoid the doctor because we know we might be diabetic, and we're really trying to avoid getting that. And what I tell patients is you want to look at PTSD like you would with any medical conditions, diabetes being a good metaphor, in that you may have it now, and you may have it for the rest of your life, but it doesn't mean that it defines you. We're not just diabetic, we're not just PTSD, and the treatment focus is really on how to live with it. You know, live with knowing that the trauma happened, that we can't turn back the past, but we can still move forward. Just like, again, with diabetes, you know, yes, we made some not very smart decisions, and that caused us to have diabetes. But it doesn't mean that we can't make changes,
right.
Or take the medication if it needs to be if it needs medication, yeah. So that we can live a healthier, fulfilling, long life. And that's what PTSD can be for a lot of people. It doesn't have to be this disability, if you will. It can be something that makes you stronger at the end of the day. But it's hard to see that, especially in the beginning and even during treatment. And that's where I would say I have the most difficulty is in getting the buy-in.
Yeah.
But what I will tell patients up and down is once they buy into the treatment and the idea that they can get better, 9 times out of 10, we've seen very good success, and that's all the patient. That's not me. I'm guiding them through it, sure, but really they're doing the homework. They're taking the medications, and they don't have to do any of that.
Right.
So their commitment to the treatment, their commitment to recognizing that they can get better, that's really what pulls them through the experience.
So let me ask you, and just in my field of work dealing with trauma, because I'm in the trenches, is professionals, right? I shared with my director with WEAC is that what I'm finding is, which we kind of overlook when we deal with our trauma, especially in schools, we only look at a lot of the kids and we look at the students. And so in my trainings, one of the things I do is, I'm sure you heard of ACE, the Adverse Childhood Experiences.
Yes.
And this instrument where we can look at how many perhaps trauma events we probably had, and if we ace out like 4 or more, we're more likely to have these different type of chronic diseases and issues. And what I start doing is every time I do training with teachers and administrators and counselors, I have them do an ACE assessment.
Yep.
And it gets really deep because you're like, wait a minute.
It's mind opening.
Trauma is supposed to be focused on me. It's supposed to be focused on the kid. I'm like, well, that's hypocritical. I never ask somebody to do something that I'm not willing to do myself.
Yeah.
So the best way to also help people with trauma is for you to be aware of yours, because what we also seeing is re-traumatization of caregivers traumatizing victims of trauma because they're not aware of their trauma. And so the reason why I brought that up is because I do believe there are traumatized teachers, there's traumatized police officers, there's traumatized counselors out there, firefighters, paramedics that see a lot of stuff, right? And a lot of times they don't get that chance to really address their own traumas. The reason I bring it up is because when I do ACE assessments with professionals, I had one teacher I think probably aced out 7 or 8. And I had them to go through, I say, if you feel comfortable, let's talk through that. And we had teachers talk about, one of my ACEs was, my family went through a bad divorce. That still affects me as an educator today. Had another, and they go down the line, it was divorce. Yeah. I had my mom and dad also were addicted to drugs, passed away, had grief and bereavement, right?
Yes.
And so it got really real to where a lot of teachers started getting emotional, crying. It was a trigger for them.
Yeah.
And I was telling the principal, I said, no, that's exactly what I want them. I said, no, don't get frantic. This is exactly what I'm, because I want them to have a surreal
that's
moment
great.
That when we're helping kids with brokenness, you need to be aware of your brokenness as well. So I just wanted to see if we could talk a little bit about the traumatized professionals.
Yeah.
This gets real for us. Social workers.
I mean, mental health especially gets the brunt end of that, because I was very lucky in my training that they very much encouraged us to be the patient as well as as well as the physician. And so I will give also a shout out to Wright State University and Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, because they did an excellent job in our training and encouraging that what we experience flows out in the way we treat our patients.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, whatever we experience will come out in any form of bias. So if you were a child of divorce, you may have sided with one parent more than the other. How will that impact how you see your patient who's in the middle of a divorce or the child who's experiencing a divorce? And those are the things that will unconsciously come up, and it will it will affect how you manage their treatment without realizing that that's what you're doing. But yeah, teachers, first responders, other mental health professionals, we hear and see things that are can really be terrible. And if you're a mandated reporter, then you know that sometimes we hear about things that we can't even conceive of because we just sometimes don't think the human mind can go there. That in and of itself can be traumatizing. But what gets missed is making sure that we address that with them, because secondary trauma is very prevalent in this professional population. And it's not unheard of for a physician, a psychologist, a social worker, a teacher, a firefighter, a military member to, you know, to hear things or see things that, you know, when they signed up for it, they didn't sign up for that.
That's right.
One of the things that we always hear about, especially with the military, is, well, they signed up for this.
Right.
So why are they bothered by it? Well, no, they signed up to serve just like teachers serve, first responders serve. But what they didn't sign up for is seeing the what could be the absolute worse in people, and children especially. I think everyone or most people have a definite soft spot for children, and we're protective, I think, as a community of our children. And so when we see something that really strays from that in the form of it really any abuse or neglect, we are surprised, but sometimes we're not, and then it becomes this new set of trauma that we didn't expect, you know, when we signed on to be teachers or when we signed on to be doctors or nurses or counselors or things like that.
That's awesome. Awesome. I'll tell you, I told you we have an awesome show, great topic. This is deep. This is powerful. You have to be brave to have these type of discussions. So we want to continue to keep it going. Feel free to give us a call. Call us. You still got time. I want to get at least one call, guys. I know you guys are listening. Somebody's out there shy and, no, I don't want to call. No, go ahead and call.
Don't have to identify yourself.
Yeah, so. You don't have to identify yourself. Exactly right. Just give us a call. Call us at 790-2040. I know you're itching. You itching. So should I call? Shouldn't I call? They may recognize my voice. We don't know who you are. We're not even going to call your name if you don't want your name out there. But come on, let's get some help out there. We know a lot of people that are suffering from a lot of trauma. We're going to get ready to take our break. But when we come back, we're just going to hear more from Dr. Nora. She is a board-certified psychiatrist. So I tell you, higher ground is the real deal when it comes to mental health. So keep it locked. You're here with Higher Ground with Dr. Hope. We'll be right back. Take care. All right, we're back here with Higher Ground with Dr. Holt, and we have our special guest in with us, Dr. Norris. We've been talking some real deal stuff. So I think we have a live caller on the line, and so we're going to get them on the line. Hi, Sean, you hear Dr. Holt, Higher Ground with Dr. Holt? No? All right.
I can hear you with no problem at all. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, ma'am.
Quick question. The doctor mentioned that professionals also have to be aware of their PSTD. How would we know if we had one?
Well, so really going through the criteria is really what's going to be helpful in that. I'm a professional. I've seen a professional myself to, you know, keep tabs on my mood, on the experiences I've had so that I can be as objective, if you will, with my patients as best I can. And so, you know, seeking help as a professional can be very difficult. If there's stigma in mental health among the general population, there is certainly an even bigger stigma among professionals, especially those who work in mental health. And so, you know, being aware of the symptoms of PTSD, knowing what they are, and then self-reflecting on whether or not you experience those criteria, I think, is going to be most beneficial. And if you feel that, you know, objectively, you may not want to see that within yourself and want you know, another professional to assess you, I always encourage that, because it's very informative as someone who works in mental health to also be aware of what triggers you have, so that at any given point, if you hear something that could be potentially triggering, you have the skills already in place to be able to cope with that.
Well, thank you for your comment, Sean, for calling in. We appreciate you. Hope that that extra advice from Dr. Norris was able to help. So, Dr. Norris, as we get closer to closing out, there's a couple things I wanted to look at too. Is usually people that have PTSD or suffer from a lot of trauma also opens the door for self-medicating, right? And opens the door for addictions and things like that. So, yeah. Could you just talk a little bit about the connection between trauma, PTSD, and self-medicating substance abuse? Yes.
Yeah. Well, as we talked about earlier, you know, one of the symptoms of PTSD is avoidance. And really what substances, alcohol in particular, does for these patients who meet criteria for PTSD is it helps them forget. It helps them forget, even if it's just for a few hours. It helps them forget, you know, what they've experienced, what they're currently going through, what they see as their life ahead of them. And it's much easier to completely dissociate in the form of, you know, blacking out or being high and things like that, as opposed to really facing it head on and recognizing that we may have to do something about it.
So
absolutely the biggest thing that I've seen with substance use is really trying to ease the symptoms of PTSD. And really the biggest thing is avoidance.
Wow. That's something else, because I know that sometimes people reaches out to substance abuse when they feel like there's no other hope and alternative. Okay. And what would you say in regards to as a psychiatrist and Can you tell us the difference between a psychologist and a psychiatrist?
Sure.
A lot of people, I'm sure, want to know the difference.
Yeah. So a psychologist, I'll talk about being a psychiatrist, but a psychiatrist is essentially a medical doctor. You know, we go to medical school, we do 4 years of residency training, and what we learn in that time frame is not just how to be a general doctor. Okay. I mean, I'm pretty good at suturing, haven't done it in a while, but theoretically I can do it, and I'm supposed to be able to do it. So if you cut yourself, I'm there. But really what we are medical doctors who specialize in mental health.
Okay.
And one of the advantages of being a psychiatrist is that you get to do both therapy and medication management.
Okay.
So for myself, what I liked about it the most is that I just naturally have more tools in my tool belt.
Okay.
Really what I've seen best is the combination of the two, of the therapy and the medication management. And what I've always told patients is medication is most of the time meant to be a bridge until we get through the work of therapy. And then once we get through the work of therapy, they really find they no longer need the sleep aid to help them sleep. They no longer need the medication to help get rid of nightmares because they no longer have nightmares. And then we can slowly peel away the medication part of the treatment. And that's been, I would say, one of the more satisfying parts of my job is being able to see them grow and recognize that, you know, I might need the medication for a little bit and I may need it for a lifetime, but at least I can live a more fulfilling life.
Don't worry.
You know,
and,
with or
and
without.
What would you say psychologists?
And with psychologists, what they bring to the table in addition to therapy is the testing interpretation.
Okay.
I would not for the life of me be able to interpret any of the tests that that psychologists do. And I love having them as resources, as colleagues, because they really bring to the table an understanding of these psychological testing that really helps to break down personalities versus mental health disorders versus one of the colleagues that I worked with when I was active duty did Rorschach testing. And, wow. You know, you see that on TV. It looks really fascinating. But then I had her, you know, she interpreted testing for a mutual patient. And the things that she was able to pull from that testing was really amazing. And it takes a lot of work. And I very much admire my psychology colleagues for being able to do the research behind because I benefit from their research and having an understanding and looking at it from a medical perspective.
Okay. And for the most part, depending on states, but most states don't allow psychologists to do the medication piece, right?
No, there are a handful of states that allow that. But as far as I know, Arizona is not one
of
them.
Right. So it takes psychiatry and psychology to partner.
it really does. Yeah. And part of it is that medications, especially psychiatric medications, are not light medications.
Right.
You know, they cross the brain barrier and it affects our brain.
Yes, it does.
It interacts with many other medications that we take on a day-to-day basis. It even interacts with, you know, the over-the-counter meds that are otherwise, you know, easy to pull from the shelf. And we underestimate the power of psychiatric medications and what they can do for the body. We sometimes don't think about how it might make us hypertensive or have low blood pressure or make us dizzy or give us heartburn or gain weight. And we forget that, you know, just because you have depression does not mean you have to have an antidepressant.
That's right.
Just because you have anxiety doesn't mean you have to have an anti-anxiety medication. It really takes knowing the whole body, you know, the physical and the psychological component of it to really understand, you know, what medication might work for this patient that may not work for this other patient.
Right. Awesome. Look, we're running out of time. I'll tell you, when it's fun and it's
time
and
flies
excited,
by. Thank
it just
you.
passed by. But we were so thankful for you to come to our show at Higher Ground. We're a live radio show in the local area, but we also have a podcast where people, your colleagues, family say, hey, I was on the radio. It's amazing that I brought some psychologists and counselors on. They said, this is the very first time I've ever done anything like this.
Thank you for doing this.
So I'm so excited to be able to be a first for some colleagues in the field. But again, we thank you, Dr. Norris. It was just a wealth of information, a breath of fresh air.
And if I can do one more plug, for anyone that has any questions about mental health, please contact your local NAMI, which is the National Alliance on Mental Illness.
Yes.
For here, it's the National Alliance on Mental Illness of Southern Arizona. So NAMISA.org. They are a wealth of information, and your local NAMI local NAMI can give you a lot of information, not just on PTSD but mental illness in general.
Do you know Kelly Norris?
No, I don't know.
Kelly Norris, she's the director for NAMI for the Southeast chapter.
Oh, okay.
They was my first guest when we launched.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so NAMI was here on our first show.
Perfect.
Yeah, so that's
resource.
Just awesome. So again, we just thank you for being with us. Any last things you would like to say, you know, in a short amount of time that, you know, that you come to your office, where your office at?
Feel free to find me at my office. My clinic is Tucson Outpatient Psychiatry on Craycroft and Pima, between Craycroft and Wilmot. I've got a website, psychiatrytucson.com. And really just seek help. It would be the last thing that I want to impart on people, because mental health really is physical health. It's medical. So at the end of the day, don't treat it differently than you would, you know, diabetes or high blood pressure.
Right.
It's just as important as anything for your well-being.
Well, thank you. This has been great. Looking forward to you probably coming back sometime later on.
Thank you. I would love it.
For some other areas that we're going to be dealing with. Eventually, we're going to be talking about bullying and the social emotional ramifications of that. And so that could
Very
be an opportunity
important.
To have you come back. So we're just excited that you decided to be with us. And so we've been honored and humbled that you decided to come.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dr. Norris, board certified psychiatrist. Listen, as we're getting ready to end our show, surely we want you to always know we're always always here at 10:30 The Voice. Every Saturday from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m., we cover areas of mental health, bullying, equity, and criminal justice reform. And so it's going to be an exciting year as we begin to talk about those issues. But yeah, if you have any additional questions, still feel free to email us at higherground1030@gmail.com. If you didn't get the call, maybe you had some additional questions. It had passed my head, and I'm out of time to talk about it, but associating PTSD to mass shootings in schools, yes, and things like that, you know. So it's really real when we get to talking about those things. Just want to give a shout out to the Metro State University of Denver WEAC team, and so we just want to say thank you for the support of the WEAC. I have the distinguished pleasure of doing national work through this this division for one of our equity centers, and so just a shout out to Dan and Mike and Darlene and Francis, and I get in trouble throwing names, Colleen, everybody that's out there, Isaac, Laura, Georgina, Moses, Dan. Just thank you for the support and the love that we do our work out and throughout the nation. Also, you probably also know me for my work I do with Tucson Unified School Districts. People call me the bullying guy, but yeah, it should be the anti-bullying guy, right? Because yeah, I don't bully people. But yeah.
You help them.
Yeah. And if anyone is bullying you, you know, feel free to always tell somebody as well, because we don't want you to feel, you know, down and out because of being bullied. So again, my last thing I want to say, if you don't have a church home, feel free to come and worship with us on Sunday mornings at Pilgrim Rest Missionary Baptist Church in Tucson, Arizona. Again, thank you for listening in. We out of here. This is Higher Ground with Dr. Hope. Enjoy your Saturday morning.